The word apartheid very much has the line on the sort of notion of hate, really, and most folk, in fact, hopefully the vast majority, found that the apartheid policies in South Africa were absolutely appalling and unacceptable. It took a long time to obviously veer away from that side of things, thanks, of course, to the fabulous work of Nelson Mandela and others. But it would seem that actually there are changes afoot, and changes which could actually lead to a reverse apartheid. And to address some of the elements relating to this, we're very pleased to welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition apartheid historian Jan Cronje, originally from Cape Town, South Africa, and indeed a specialist in this field. Jan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I'm really good, and I'm very happy to talk to you.
Excellent. Now, a bit of background about yourself. You're one of South Africa's first civil defence officers. You worked for local government. You were informally blacklisted from the apartheid civil defence in 1992 after you published a dissertation which criticised the civil defence system.
I had the cheek to criticise the bureaucracy of the apartheid government on their policies, because I did not agree with apartheid.
So would you like to just take us through the narrative as it stands now, in terms of obviously this headline, really, that actually by 2050 we might well actually move to a situation where any remaining white population in South Africa are very much prejudiced against?
Yeah, quite true. You know, if you take the history of Zimbabwe, there was 300,000 white Zimbabweans living in Zimbabwe, very profitable farmers, and they created jobs for so many of the black Zimbabweans, and they reduced them to less than 30,000. Now, the same problem is happening in South Africa now. It's so ironic. On Monday, they bust in a group of non-whites to a small town, Rubikvis, in the Western Cape, and they all but destroyed the little town. And the problem was the government is not giving them housing. So, you know, that type of thing, the revenge, the payback, call it what you want to call it, they want everything sorted, and they want it sorted now, and it's not the way to go about it. And they target the white community to do that. So they kill approximately one white farmer every week. So the way it's going now, people that they don't kill will just leave the country. And in 3 decades, the white people will be reduced to a fraction of a percentage.
There is part of me which initially sort of thinks, clearly, this is a very drastic situation that we're talking about here. Obviously, you have a book that you've produced, Apartheid, The Blame, Past and Present. I think we're agreed it's wrong, fundamentally wrong, to discriminate on any particular idea, whether it's gender, race, or any sort of aspect. That's just fundamentally sort of inappropriate. I can bring Fiona here. I mean, your thoughts on what you've just been listening to.
Well, it's tragic. It surprises me that the government isn't doing something, because you know, this is foreseeable. You've got a situation where after decades and decades of apartheid
and misrule,
people are going to be looking for someone to blame and to take out their anger on. So one of the things that initially impressed me, actually, about the post-apartheid government was they seemed to have got this. They seemed to be understanding and to be recognizing that people needed support, they needed resources, the balance needed to be equalized, but at the same time there needed to be conversations rather than attacks and blaming, you know. So what went wrong?
The main problem, unfortunately, with any political situation, the politicians need to retain the support of the majority. Mm. And the majority are the disenfranchised black people. And quite correctly, they should be enfranchised. They should receive land. They should receive the wealth that they were not given for a very long time. But the problem is, unfortunately, The politicians, as well as the population, is very aggrieved with the past. Mm. And people like Jacob Zuma would lead a crowd singing, "Kill the Boer, kill the farmer."
Mm.
Now, that kind of hate speech does not solve any problems. It creates problems. So actually, they're enticing the murder squads to go to farms and kill the white farmers, believing if they do that, they will drive the Europeans out of the country and they will take their country back. But that's not the way to do it. That's the wrong way to do it, because the people, the Afrikaner nation, was planted in Africa by the Europeans. And over centuries, they developed as an acknowledged nation of the world. And they've lived on farms for generations. To just go there and tell them, look, we're going to kill you and we're going to take your farm is the wrong way to do it.
So there's an element of Mizuma and the like distracting from their own failings by whipping up anti-white sentiment?
Quite so. The Economic Freedom Front under Julius Malema is one of the big, big, big problems for South Africa. He's been reprimanded recently by the British politicians to pull his head in and support Cyril Ramaphosa, which he should do. But he was actually challenging Ramaphosa, and his favorite rhetoric is that we're not going to kill the whites now, not now, implying we're going to kill you in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that kind of hate speech has got no place in a country that, like South Africa, that really need to get themselves together and make a profitable future, because South Africa has been turned into a failed state.
Indeed.
Is this another case of, we look back at British history and we think, uh-oh, we've got it wrong again, we've got challenges with respect to this? I mean, you've obviously offered a critical overview of how Britain in particular has portrayed a historical world. I mean, as I like to say, in the Boer War, we actually gave the world concentration camps result. Only kidding.
Yeah, unfortunately, the reality is one of my biggest concerns are that the Western world that actually used South Africa, the white South African government, to fight their wars against the communists in Africa. Lately, when things go wrong in South Africa, they just turn a cold shoulder. They turn a blind eye. They don't get involved. And in fact, if you remember that Cecil John Rhodes, the Cape Colony Prime Minister, British Prime Minister in the Cape, he actually promulgated the first apartheid laws, the Glen Grey Act. Where he actually created reserves for black people, and he hoarded them into those reserves, and they had to pay tax to live there, and then they were forced into labor for the European colonizers. So apartheid per se was actually created by the British in terms of legislation. And the white South Africans that took over government, they inherited that system and they sort of constitutionalized it and made it even worse. So I blame the white Afrikaner politicians for what they did, because it was totally wrong. But I also, there's a blame to be put at the door of the British colonizers, who started all of apartheid and the problems in Africa.
Almost a fifth of the way through the 21st century, is there a chance that Nelson Mandela's concept of this rainbow nation can still be rescued from the brink? I mean, because it does seem crazy that a country which is so resplendent with riches and wealth in all sorts of ways, etc., could well be heading into an environment where, you know, it almost becomes a no-go area for different sort of racial types.
You know, on the front page of my book, I've written, my dream is that South Africa's failure can turn into what it should have been, Mandela's rainbow nation. I've got great respect for Mandela. He had the right idea. He had the solution, not hatred, but reconciliation and growth. There is hope, but I'm afraid that South Africa, the South African government, need the support of the international world to do the right thing. They need, at this stage, there's no respect for the rule of law. There's absolute anarchy in South Africa. People believe that they can get on buses, drive to a small town, destroy everything, and tell the government, if you don't give us houses, we're going to destroy the social society. And somebody in the Western world needs to stand up and say to Cyril Ramaphosa and his government, look, you have to get this sorted out. This is not the way to do it. You have to talk to your people. You have to guide them and instill on them that if they don't reconcile and go for a peaceful situation, they're going to destroy the country, and that's what they're doing at the moment.
Fiona, any closing thoughts?
Well, thinking on that, this seems like, you say, someone has to say something, and yet governments are failing all over the West, you know.
The opportunities of actually sort of inviting Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump to advise on South Africa seem to be that's remote, shall
we
say.
Yes, I would say so, yes. But in a situation where the British can't provide housing for their population, you know, how can they take any sort of moral high ground over Ramaphosa?
Yeah, well, you know, I totally agree with you, but, you know, everybody makes mistakes. Nations made mistakes. And, you know, to go and destroy Cecil John Rhodes' statues and pull them down, that's not the answer. History is history. You can't erase history. But what you have to do is, I don't think that Britain or America or whoever need to supply housing to South African people, but I think they need to give them moral support, guidance, and sound advice how to deal with things. On the political level, there's a lot to be done, but the Western governments need to stand up and say, look, what's happening in South Africa is wrong. When Cyril Ramaphosa came to the Commonwealth meeting recently and he met the Queen and he met Theresa May, they talked about a lot of things, but no mention was made of the white people being killed for 22 years, and it's like 30,000 people being killed. That should be talked about, and they should tell Cyril Ramaphosa this is not acceptable. This is not the way to run your country. You should do better than that. And it's a pity, like Belgium, in Belgium, the government talks about the problem. It was discussed in the Belgian parliament. In Australia, they actually came forward and said, well, we will accommodate white farmers from South Africa. We'll fast-track their visas. But why only Belgium and Australia? The big guns is America and Britain and Germany. You know, the South African DNA is made up of 30% Dutch, 30% German, 5% British DNA, 17% French. Why are those countries not coming forward and talk about it and say, look, this is unacceptable, you need to change?
Yeah, and you've raised a number of very key points there. The book, of course, Apartheid, The Blame, Past and Present, available from most sources. Are there any other areas that people can actually follow up on what we've been speaking about today? Do you have a website, social media, and things you'd like to just mention as well?
Yes, I've got a website. It's www.apartheidandme. And apartheid is spelled with a H-E-I-D. I know a lot of people see it as hate, H-A-T-E, but it's www.apartheidandme.com, all in lowercase. And I daily put the breaking news on my homepage so they can see what's exactly happening in South Africa at the moment. They can also order my book on the website, or they can order it on Amazon.
Jan Conyer and Professor Fiona Moore, many thanks indeed.
Thank you very
much. Thank you for talking to me. I really appreciate that.